this week, June 11th, 2013, on The Digital Story. The Samsung Galaxy camera. iFi Mobi. The Olympus 75mm f1.8 lens. All of this and more with yours truly, Derek Story, on The Digital Story. Welcome back to another Digital Story. I have three morsels for you this week. I mean, three good stuff. Sometimes it works out that way. Some weeks are just better than others when it comes to things to talk about. So the three things that I have this week, as I mentioned at the top of the show, is a Samsung Galaxy digital camera, which is half smartphone, half camera kind of thing. A new card from iFi, the Mobi, which solves, in my opinion, one of the biggest shortcomings of the previous iFi cards, and then the Olympus 75mm f1.8 lens for Micro Four Thirds. Oh my gosh, what a beauty that is. That'll be the third story. But let's start with the Samsung. Now, this is the camera that I'm talking about. Is the GC110. There were earlier versions of the Galaxy digital camera that had cellular also. This is a Wi-Fi only version that just recently came out. Now, by being Wi-Fi only, Samsung was able to bring the price down a bit. The earlier models were over $500. This one is at $449. Which is still a pretty good chunk of change for essentially a compact digital camera. So it's worth, you know, I was curious, what is the appeal? What, you know, who would this camera be for? So let me tell you a little bit about it, and then we'll try to figure out that second part. The first thing that will jump out at you about this Samsung Galaxy camera is it has this ginormous LCD on the back. The whole back is an LCD. There are no buttons on the back at all. It's a 4.8 LCD, high definition, very beautiful screen. So you have this giant LCD on the back, and then on the front, you have a zoom lens, and it's a 21 times optical zoom lens. It's 23 millimeters on the wide end. So you've got a big LCD on the back, or a big zoom lens on the front. This thing is powered by a pretty hefty processor, a 1.4 gigahertz quad-core processor. Now, that sounds like a lot. Actually, because of the demands of this camera slash smartphone, I think it actually could use even a bit more processing power. There were times when I got a little bit ahead of it. We'll talk more about that. Now, it's an Android-based device, and it runs Jelly Bean, Android version 4.1. And then it has Wi-Fi connectivity, as I mentioned earlier. So when you have the lens retracted on the front, and you're just holding this thing in your hand, it feels like a big smartphone or a small note or tab or somewhere in between there. I mean, it's a big screen. It comes with apps already loaded. And then I went ahead through Google Play and added a Flickr. It came with Instagram already. I added Flickr. There's a new version, a new Android version of Flickr that's quite nice. It sort of brings it up to speed with the iOS version of Flickr. I have Dropbox running on there. There's an app they call Gallery and Photo Wizard. Samsung provides those, Gallery for looking at your pictures and Photo Wizard for working on them. I went ahead and loaded the Gmail app. It has weather. Let me see what else I got here. I got all sorts of good stuff on in the apps world. Of course, you've got music apps in here. There are maps, Messenger. You know, it's an Android device, and the screen is actually quite nice. There's YouTube on here also. Even if you didn't use the camera, you could just play with this thing and use this nice big 4.8 inch screen to look at things that are going on Flickr and Instagram and read your email and all that good stuff. So, and then it behaves just like an Android device. It has their soft buttons on the bottom. It doesn't have any hard buttons, but you have a soft home button, a soft return button, and a soft menu button. So those of you that use Android devices, of course, would feel, you know, very comfortable using this camera. Now, when you want to take pictures with it, then over in the left-hand corner, there is a camera icon that's always there. And you press that icon, you tap on that icon, and it activates the camera. And then you hold it up and you compose with the LCD, with this ginormous LCD, all the controls, for instance, setting the modes and things like that, are all soft buttons. So in other words, I press the mode button. I can go to expert mode where I have, you know, program mode, aperture priority, manual. There is a smart mode on this thing that has basically its scene mode. So you have waterfall, panorama, action, party indoors, you know, the basic scene modes sort of thing that we're used to. And then it also has here, I'm going to hit my little return button. It has a fully auto mode that you can use also, and it has a movie mode. So it has, you know, kind of all the usual suspects. It has a pop-up flash. It has a zooming ring around the shutter button so you can zoom in and out. Now, when you're taking a picture, when you're just in picture mode, the zooming ring works very well. And like I said, it's got a heck of an optical zoom on this thing. It can really move in there. Now, for instance, when I'm in Instagram and I go to camera mode on Instagram, the zooming ring doesn't work. So it's one of those things, you know, you still feel like you got, you know, one foot on both sides of the shore here a little bit. When you're in camera mode, you get all the functionality that you would expect. When you're using camera mode in Instagram or Flickr or something, then it can vary from, you know, software application to software application. The shots itself are pretty good. I've been looking at them. I would say that it's not an amazing camera, but it is an adequate camera in terms of, you know, optical quality, image quality. JPEGs only, no RAW, of course. One of the big things that's a plus when you're indoors is that you get to compose on this beautiful LCD screen. That's a lot of fun. When you're outdoors, you know, I read some reviews about this and they said, well, you know, the screen's actually not bad outdoors. That wasn't my experience. I had a hard time using it outdoors. And not only did I have a hard time composing with it outdoors, but, you know, all the buttons are on the LCD too. So I actually had a little difficulty actually controlling the camera outdoors, you know, seeing where the buttons were in order to make changes and so forth. So on that part of it, I would say that, you know, the LCD only situation is a downside. Now, it's not going to be any more of a downside than any other LCD-only camera, except that the buttons, the control buttons, are also on the LCD, where on many other cameras that are LCD-only, you do have some physical buttons for controlling the camera, which, you know, helps you when you're outdoors. You know, and obviously, since the whole back of the camera is a big chunk of glass, there isn't any angling of the LCD or anything like that. It is fixed on the back of the camera. Who is this camera for? And that's something that, you know, I've really been thinking about since I've had it here for the last 3 weeks or so. You know, when I got it, I logged into my Google account, which is, you know, something that you do on most Android devices. So, you know, my email works and all the pictures I publish on Google Plus show up in the gallery, which at first kind of freaked me out a little bit, right? I mean, I hadn't taken a picture at all with this camera. And then, you know, I tap on the gallery part of it there, and suddenly I've got, you know, like a ton of images in there. And I'm going, whoa, where did that come from? But, you know, it's picking up all the stuff that I've done with my Google account, and it's putting them in the gallery there. So, you know, I'm not sure how people will feel about this. I mean, you know, you don't have to log into your Google account to use the camera. However, if you want to get applications out of Google Play or whatever, you're going to need to do that at some point. So, I mean, that part is interesting to me. And in a lot of ways, I was intrigued by it more as an Android device than I was as a camera. As a camera, you know, I'm just sort of looking at it. And I'm going, yes, it's got a nice zoom. But, you know, I've never been that attracted to cameras that don't have physical buttons, you know, where you depend on the LCD only. So I thought it was an adequate camera. I had fun taking pictures with it when the lighting conditions, you know, were favorable for using the LCD. But it wasn't anything that bowled me over as a camera. But as an Android device, I thought it was pretty interesting. And now it's also fairly large. I don't think I mentioned that before. It's just a little bit short of 5 inches long. And then, you know, it's a couple inches deep. So it's a big device. I mean, you know, well, obviously, if the LCD on the back is 4.8 inches, that gives you an idea about how big the camera has to be. And again, there's, you know, pluses and minuses to this. The plus is that it feels good when you hold it in your hand when you're using it as an Android device. Right, you got something good to hang on to. The minus is that it's not as easy to slip into your pocket as, let's say, an iPhone would be. You know, that is a lot smaller and definitely a lot thinner. So I was thinking, well, you know, back to the question I posed earlier, who is this camera for? And I was thinking, you know, it could be for teenagers who, you know, have photography as, you know, as part of their life. Either, you know, let's say they're on yearbook or they love Instagram. They like publishing to Flickr, things like that. I think that part of it is neat. You could travel with this camera, especially if your photography demands weren't very intense. And, you know, as long as you could get a Wi-Fi network somewhere, you know, it would double really as a, you know, as a small computer. It has so much functionality. You can do your email and all that sort of stuff on it. So in that sense, it could be a single device sort of thing. Now, what some of the reviewers said, I took exception with, in the sense that, you know, the image quality on it is average, but they're saying, you know, most of the people that are going to be using this will be using it, you know, on Instagram or whatever. And by the time they add filters and stuff, it doesn't really make that much difference how good the image quality is. Well, I beg to differ. I always want to be able to capture good image quality, even if it's a JPEG file, not a RAW file. You know, and then, yes, I might send a version of that shot to Instagram or a version of that shot to Flickr, but I may also want to make a 13x19 print with it too. And in that case, I'm going to want all the image quality I can get to do that. So I think image quality is important. So this is a device that is hard to put in a category, hard to put in a box, because it is so different. But I would say that for people that are maybe fascinated by Android devices and don't really want to have an Android device as their everyday smartphone or their everyday tablet, I think would really enjoy getting to know Android on the Samsung Galaxy camera, while at the same time having a good camera and being able to shoot and publish fairly quickly as long as there are Wi-Fi networks available. So, I mean, I'll leave it up to you from there, but I did want to talk about it because it is such an unusual device in the sense that, you know, it's got this crazy 4.8-inch screen on the back, run powered by Android Jelly Bean, and then, you know, this big zoom lens on the front. These are interesting times we live in, wouldn't you say? Okay, the second story is the iFi Mobi. And boy, oh boy, have the folks at iFi been paying attention to what's going on. Anyone who owns my recent book, you know, iPad for Digital Photographers, know that I talk about the iFi card in the book, and I talk about the Toshiba FlashAir card in the book. And in the end, I recommend the FlashAir over the iFi card, mainly because I like the way the FlashAir card works, where it sets up its own access point, which is just easier to work with, and I think it's more flexible too. Well, last week, iFi announced this new card, the Mobi, and guess what it does? It sets up its own access point, and it does so quite nicely. So it really addressed the biggest shortcoming of previous iFi cards, which were hard to establish a direct connection with the camera for transferring images. And in fact, I think the Mobi has a few advantages over the Toshiba FlashAir card. One is it comes in a larger capacity. It is 16 gigabytes. So they have an 8 gigabyte version and a 16 gigabyte version. The 16 gigabyte version runs $75 on Amazon right now. There'll be a link in the show notes on the digital story. The other thing is that it's faster. It's a class 10, and I believe the Toshiba FlashAir card is a class 6. So it has more speed. And then I like the way that it interacts with the iPad. In my case, the iPad Mini. There's an iFi app, and basically you can just have, when you're taking the pictures, they can just stream in to the app. You set up an ad hoc network. Actually, the card sets it up. You just log into it. When the camera is sending pictures to the iPad Mini, they talk. When the pictures stop sending, it stops transmitting, so it saves battery power on your camera and it allows your iPad to go back to the other Wi-Fi network that you're using, so then you could send out. The thing that I really like in terms of picture organization is that it sets up an album in your Photos app that's labeled iFi, and all the pictures that you stream onto the iPad or your iPhone are available in that album, and there you can manage them. You can delete them. You can open them in iPhoto for iOS. It's really, you're already used to working that way, so it's not like you have to learn a new app in order to use this card. And I found that super convenient. I really like the way it is. So you have the iFi app where, you know, it does create a gallery. It will stream them in a full screen. You can view stuff. But when you're ready to manage the images, you either go to your Photos app or you go to iPhoto for iOS or any other app that reads albums, and then all the images are there in the iFi album. Really, really nice. Now, and I also appreciate the way it does power management, trying to save power on the camera and the iPad both. One complaint is that it's almost too conservative. I wish I could set the time, because when I was working on a shoot, actually I was doing a studio shoot with it, you know, so I'd line up, I'd take a few shots. Sometimes while I was changing the position of the item that I was shooting, that pause would be a little longer than the iFi card liked, and then it would go ahead and stop transmitting, which means the iPad went back to the other Wi-Fi network, which meant when I start shooting again, I had to go back to the iPad, go to settings, log back into the iFi card network in order to resume the streaming of images. So I'm hoping that in an upcoming version of the app, they will have some control one way or another as to how long the iFi card transmits before it times out. I'd like it to be able to set it to like 5 minutes or something like that. So, you know, I don't think it's going to drain my camera battery that much more, but it keeps me from having to log back into the iFi card if I take any sort of pause during the shoot. The iFi Mobi is compatible with any camera that accepts SDHC cards. So basically any modern camera that takes SD cards, it'll work great with. I was using it with the Olympus OMD. And of course, it even has in the menu system iFi power management, where I could turn on and off iFi transmitting. So if I just wanted to shoot with that card, but I didn't want the transmitter to go on, I didn't want it to be broadcasting and using energy, then I could just turn that off in the menu of the OMD. And a lot of cameras these days actually have iFi control built into the menu system. So you might want to check your particular camera and see if that's there. Bottom line is, I really like it. I think iFi did a good job with this card. You know, the way my setup is now, I basically carry three cameras with me most of the time. I have the Olympus OMD with a variety of lenses, and that one will have the iFi Mobi in it. And then I have the Fujifilm X20 That's my compact camera, my big compact camera that has the fast zoom lens and everything. I had the Toshiba FlashAir card in that camera. And then I'm carrying the Canon PowerShot N, that little guy, the little square guy, which has its own Wi-Fi in there, so I can use any card I want because it broadcasts. And all three of them will talk directly to my iPad mini. So I'll keep, you know, playing with them all. But right now, in terms of ease of use, now I give the iFi Mobi a bit of an edge over the Toshiba FlashAir card. Both are good, but I think the iFi Mobi's got it at the moment. Let's see if Toshiba can answer the bell on this one. Right now, though, for $75, a 16-gigabyte card, Class 10 speed, iOS, and I believe Android app, the iFi Mobi is a pretty good deal. Third story, I want to talk about a new lens for Micro Four Thirds. New, not in the sense of its design. The Olympus 75mm f1.8 has been out, for a few months now. But it was only out in silver before, and I didn't get it when it was silver because I have a black OMD, and I just didn't want to spend $899 for a lens, no matter how much I wanted it, that wouldn't look good on the camera. I want the whole thing. If I'm going to spend that kind of money, I want it to look good. I want it to perform well. You know, I want it to check all of the boxes. The silver model wasn't doing that for me. Then, when they just announced the latest Olympus pen, they also announced the 75-1.8 and the 17mm 1.8 in black. And the minute they announced it in black, I go, oh, right, I am going to get that 75mm lens I have been wanting to try for a long time. So I ordered it, I got on the waiting list at B&H, the whole thing, and I ordered it as soon as it was available, and I've been shooting with it now for about a week. And so I just wanted to give you just a first impression about this lens. In short, it's wonderful. I think it has suddenly become my favorite lens on Micro Four Thirds, and that is saying something because I adore some of the lenses I'm using right now. The 12-35 f2.8 by Panasonic, I just think is fantastic, as well as the 60mm f2.8 macro by Olympus, and then, of course, the Leica 25mm f1.4. I really dig all those lenses. But the thing that the 75mm can do that none of the other lenses do as well is that it can give me those soft backgrounds in a way that is just absolutely gorgeous. Now, part of it is, of course, that it has more magnification. It's a 75mm, which means it does have some magnification. It does have a wide aperture, f1.8. But on a Micro Four Thirds sensor, we all know that you don't get the same equivalent soft backgroundness on these lenses that you would on a full frame DSLR. So how does it do this? I mean, the fall off on this lens is really fast. And the more I look at the photos and the more I think about it, is that they have done something. Olympus has done something with the lens design itself that has a little bit of magic in there. They have figured out something optically that separates this lens, in my mind, from a lot of other lenses and from any other lens that I have shot with on Micro Four Thirds. The backgrounds are creamy, the bokeh is beautiful, and the fall off is fast. So it is really something. And suddenly, now with my OMD, a camera that I just adore anyway, I can shoot portraits and still lifes and all that stuff and just make that background fall right off the table. And not only fall right off the table, but have this kind of this creamy, wonderful texture to it that is just hard to describe. You have to see it. I've posted a couple shots on Flickr, the cactus shot, and then I did a shot of the Fujifilm X20 with the mechanical cable release. Both of those were shot with a 75 millimeter at f/1.8, shot wide open. And I'm going to be posting more. I've shot a lot with it. I've got all sorts of good stuff. And just look at those things and look at the way that background goes crazy. And when you look at the cactus, people ask me, well, how far back are the backgrounds of this? They're not far back at all. In fact, you look at the cactus, there's three of them in a pot, and then there's the background. It's already getting soft by the cactus in the trio that's behind the front cactus. It's already falling off, even before we get away from these cactus that are only, you know, whatever, 6 or 7 inches tall. These little cactus that are just there in a pot. So it falls off quickly. Downsides on this lens, I've only found one so far, and that is it does not close focus. And again, I think there's something in the lens design that gives us that, all the other things that we like so much. It appears that one of the trade-offs for that is, you know, the lack of the ability to close focus. I think it feels like the closest I can focus is like 2.5 feet or something, you know, so you can't get close to your subjects at all with this. The manual focusing ring is very nice on it. And in fact, I find myself manually focusing with it a lot because the fall off is so steep that I want to focus exactly. I want that focus to be exactly where I want it. So I have my OMD set up that one of the function buttons switches back and forth between manual focus and autofocus. Hit the button, go to manual focus. Just turn that ring back and forth until I get it to focus exactly where I want, and then take the picture. And it is beautiful. So it has a 58 millimeter front filter ring. Nice big objective glass on there. It looks great on the OMD. It's just a very sharp looking lens. I'm lining up some portrait shoots with it right now. As soon as I do those, I'll get those shots published and I'll talk about it as a portrait lens, but I anticipate good things. So that's the Olympus 75 millimeter f/1.8. Wow. Now available in both black and silver. Okay, let's take care of a little virtual camera club business. The photo assignment for June is stylish. Stylish. Think about that one. There are some definite possibilities with stylish. That is the photo assignment for June. The photo assignment is sponsored by our friends over at SizzlePix, high definition output for your photography. And they're running an offer right now. Anyone buying... excuse me, a little frog there in my throat. I just love allergy season up here in Sonoma County. This is like the pollen capital of the world. Anyway, back to SizzlePix. So there's a special offer right now. Anyone buying my new book, iPad for Digital Photographers, no matter where you get it, no matter how much you pay for it, if you put the password for the Book Owner's Lounge in your comments field on your SizzlePix order, you'll get 10% off your entire order. So essentially, it's like you get the book for free. So, you know, buy the book, use the Book Owner's Lounge passcode in the comments field for your SizzlePix, and then off you go. And this is a great time of year to be ordering SizzlePix. They make such wonderful gifts for all sorts of occasions. You get the 1-2 punch with it. You get whatever the image is, you know, the strike the chords of the recipient's heart. And then at the same time, they're looking at this thing going, my gosh, what is this beautiful piece of metal that has this image infused on it? It's just gorgeous. And of course, they can take it right out of the box and hang it on the wall. SizzlePix.com. They have a tile on every page of the Digital Story. Sponsor the photo assignment and help keep this podcast on the air. And by the way, if you're ordering through B&H or Amazon, please click on the respective tile under the products header on the box halfway down on the Digital Story page. So in that center column there, there's a box called products, and it has, you know, a B&H tile, has a lynda.com tile and an Amazon tile there. Actually, I think the Amazon tile is on top. If you click on those tiles first, they'll take you right over to the site, you know, and then when you place your order and everything, that helps, you know, that goes through our affiliate account there. and that helps support the site. Doesn't cost you a penny more, but you get to do a good turn for this podcast. And then our friends over at Red River Paper, who have this happening Facebook page, facebook.com/redriverpaper, who make beautiful photo paper, absolutely stunning photo paper, just about any surface that you would want, just about any size that you would want, and quality as good as anything on the market. Personally, I use it for all my printing, but you save money. 40% off average for this high quality gallery type paper. They have everything from metallic surfaces to fine art surfaces to you name it. They've got it all. They seriously have it all. They have luster surfaces. 40% off. That's because they make the paper and they sell the paper direct. They have a tile on all the pages of the digital story. Red River Paper, high quality, affordable paper for your inkjet printer. All right, I think that is going to do it for me this week. Good stuff, huh? I mean, really some fun stuff. If you have a chance and you're thinking about doing the wireless connection between your camera and your iOS device, throw iFi Mobi into the mix. I think it's a winner, and I think that app is just going to get better. All the other goodies are fun, too. I'll be back next week with more stories. Come back, spend some time with me. Until then, bye-bye now.
Your questions and comments, email them to questions@thedigitalstory.com. For show notes, weblogs, and informative articles, visit www.thedigitalstory.com. We'll see you next time on The Digital Story.